Welcome to Manager Tools. Training is not the answer. This cast answers these questions. Should I send my directs to training? How can I ensure they get the most out of training? How can I evaluate the potential value of training? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
One of the scariest moments for new managers is the moment that one of their team resigns. Not only do they have to get through the resignation process, but now they have to hire a new person. Where do they start? What should they look for in a resume? What should they ask in interviews? How do you evaluate the answers? Just doing what you've seen done isn't a recipe for success, even though that's the method that most managers use. Instead, listen to Mark's new book, The Effective Hiring Manager, out on audiobook now and narrated by Mark. Every question you've had about hiring answered in our actionable manager tools style. Find links to all the ways you can purchase it on our website.
Dude, you're killing me here.
I know.
You're killing me here because, of course, hopefully most of our audience knows that we do training, but we're going to, and many organizations say that training is the go-to answer for skill development. But training isn't really what you want.
Yeah, and the reason I've done this cast is because I have had this conversation a lot lately. And, you know, $16 billion a year is spent on leadership training in the U.S. alone. And most of it's not any good, guys. I'm sorry. We think ours is an exception. I know that sounds terrible. We're not against our competitors. I've said it before many times in the cast. We are not competing with our competitors. We are competing for the customer's benefit. If there were no competitors in our industry, we would still be doing what we're doing. So I don't think of myself as competitive. I'm not trying to beat the other people who do what we do. I wish them well. I believe in a world of abundance as opposed to one of scarcity. So this is not a competitive thing at all. But what frustrates me is because training is seen as an answer, or in many cases, the answer, the institutions around training support the training event and nothing else. And training is not the answer. It's only a means to an end, and it is not the end in and of itself. I mean, how many times have you had somebody who they went to some training or they attended something at work, and a week later, nothing's different? You know, that's wasteful. So here's our outline. Training isn't what you want. Okay. Particularly if you're a manager, what you actually want is behavior change. And if you want to change behavior, you've got to have people measure and report on their behavior change as opposed to just attend an event.
Cool. Now, okay. So let's talk about why training isn't what we want. And look at my experience as an executive, and everything in my 60 years of life tells me training is great because it's really easy to buy. It's easy to find. Organizations are set up to approve training. They're not as well set up to approve product purchases of products, right?
Yeah, there's an entire infrastructure around buying training. Companies are good at it. There are lists of approved sources or trainers. There are price ranges. There are forms to fill out. There's something else that contributes to training being seen as an end-all, maybe not an end-all and a be-all, but at least an end-all, is that training is an event. It's a singular instance. You go, you come back, it's done. It's much easier financially, accounting-wise, to buy a time-bound event as a corporate purchaser than it is to get approval for a license or access to something or a subscription, for instance. And again, that's in part because training is tangible. You have to go. You have to show up somewhere. If we're going to pay you money and somebody's going to have to go and we're going to have the opportunity cost of losing our employee for a day or two or whatever, you have to be good. And so therefore, it's a tautology because they have to be good. Therefore, they are good. Otherwise, our company wouldn't have this entire infrastructure built around buying training. Now, look, some companies attempt to get around this and say, well, we're not going to buy training. We don't do external training. A good example is FedEx. A number of years ago, we think the world of FedEx. They're a vendor of ours. I've been to Memphis many times, and they have a rule that they don't pay for training for their managers. And several years ago, we had friends at FedEx, and they said, you guys need to do some conferences close to FedEx facilities. And so we set up a couple of public conferences in places close to FedEx, and then discovered we hadn't done our homework, because about 2 months later, somebody said, hey, look, that's a really great idea. I really appreciate it. Do you know that FedEx specifically prohibits us from attending external training and won't give us any budget? And I was astounded. I actually never heard of that before. There are places where it's hard to buy training. And in many of those cases, there's an internal training department. And internal training departments can be great because they're flexible, and everything they do can be completely customized, which I think is super important. The problem too often in internal training departments, and I'm going to get in trouble here, but is there are an awful lot of people in internal training departments who don't have experience. They're essentially external trainers that have been moved internally, or they're HR people who are trainers, and they don't have experience in the work that the types of jobs that the people they're training have done. They don't have any, if you pardon the expression, line experience. And in addition, there are an awful lot of trainers who make the mistake of saying, oh, just tell me what it is and I can be training on it tomorrow, which unfortunately, there's no intelligent audience who can't see through a trainer who doesn't know anything more that's on the slides. Look, training exists. It's supposed to be good. And unfortunately, the common wisdom about training is just wrong. The purpose of training is to impart skills. If you don't know how to do something, and there's a gap between what you know how to do and what you need to know how to do to be good at your job at a higher level, you and your boss can probably agree to that. It's certainly necessary that you learn how to do that skill. And when I say that skill, I include some level of quality in there, because I suppose everybody technically can present, for instance. They might just be horrible at it. And so, but to be good at something may require some additional outside information that your boss doesn't have time for. And heck, we support that in our coaching model. One of our tenets of our coaching model is, when you're the coach, you don't have to be the trainer. You don't have to train all of your people to be great public speakers, for instance, or to run a meeting. You're supposed to avail yourself of other resources. So even if you know how to do something, doesn't mean you will choose to do it. And that's part of the problem as well with training. And even further, let alone choose to do it at the right time for the benefit of the organization. There's basically a gap between knowing and doing. By the way, if you like that phrase, it's not mine. It's from a business book called The Knowing-Doing Gap. I think Jeffrey Pfeffer wrote it. And unfortunately, it's terrible. All it is 150 pages. Don't get me wrong, Pfeffer's a genius, but it's a book, entire book, that just describes the fact that there is a knowing and doing gap in major organizations in the world today. It doesn't tell you how to fix the knowing-doing right. gap.
And most of you probably didn't need to read the book to know that.
Yeah, well, yeah. If you've been listening to us for a while, you probably gleaned that. And I think actually I might have it reviewed on the website somewhere to make sure people don't go buy it. And I gave it 1 star or no stars. Look, the problem with this knowing-doing gap is that most training events or programs don't bridge the gap at all. And if you don't bridge the gap, you don't have value. Because to teach someone something that they know, which to some degree is pedagogical, that's what we learn in school, is only, now, this is probably too strong a statement, but it's only academically useful, because companies don't pay for knowledge, they pay for behavior among their employees. In fact, I've been on panels where I said, look, if the gap isn't bridged, training is worse than useless. It's wasteful. I remember hearing years ago, somebody said, new skills that aren't used aren't skills at all, because a skill is a thing you do. If behavior doesn't change after we incurred a cost for these new, quote, skills, unquote, that's waste. Now, don't get me wrong, guys. There's great training out there, and I'm not talking about ours, okay? I happen to like ours. I think ours is exceptional. But you don't, I mean, I'm not talking about ours right now. Consider one of the most widely praised corporate training efforts everywhere I go. Presentation skills with video practice. No matter where I go, when I ask corporate clients, leaders, managers, participants, training managers, HR people who set it up, development people, what other training they provide that gets good marks from attendees and from their bosses who have to pay for it after their training budget, out of their training budget, they almost always say presentation training. Sometimes other people mention other stuff, and there's some good stuff, but it's few and far between. But presentation skills is by far the most common. In most cases, it involves some training, some basic knowledge, imparting of knowledge, and then the participant gives a 5 or maybe a 10 minute prepared presentation that is captured on video. And then a professional presentation coach, and in my estimation, it's usually somebody from outside of the organization, but not always, that person becomes a critic in a good way and points out specific behaviors that the training attendee, the participant, did well or did poorly. And then they give the presentation again, and they have significant improvements, and they record that one too, and there's a before and after video now, okay? And if you just think about that for a minute, you could probably see where this is better training than most training you attended. It relies heavily on the adult learning model, where in adult learning, adults want to be actively involved. They want to do something rather than hear something. We do this at all manager tools trainings. We practice feedback. We practice coaching. We practice delegation. We practice different communication patterns at the Effective Communication Conference, and it's actually quite fun. We practice creating questions and asking questions for interviews and how to probe, and we practice probing interview answers at the Effective Hiring Manager Conference. And most trainings don't do that.
Yeah, that's why Toastmasters, by the way, if you haven't heard of Toastmasters, you need to know, right? That's why it's so good. Like, you're learning how to speak by speaking a lot.
Yes,
and getting exactly. Tons of feedback. Sounds like manager tools a little bit. Yeah,
I will say something else. When I mentioned this sometimes, the adult learning model versus pedagogy, right? The teaching children, I usually get a question, maybe not usually, often get a question, which is, well, how does that model or how does this training, your training or somebody else's, address different learning styles? I'm an auditory learner, I'm a kinesthetic learner or whatever. Guys, I'm sorry, I like to be really honest to the point of candor and brutal honesty about what we do and what we don't do and why we do it and why we don't and what we think, what we believe. And we don't believe in the different learning styles. There's scientific evidence that it's not a significant thing, that the most effective learning includes all of those things, and that a person who says, I'm a this type of learner or I'm a that type of learner, actually, it's not scientifically accurate. So we tend not to think of people based on their learning preference. We tend to think on engaging all of the senses that addresses the entire range of learning preferences. I'm going to get some email for that, I know.
Yeah, you
are. Yeah, okay. Okay, and look, let's go further. Sometimes training attempts to bridge the gap of knowing and doing with motivation. They teach you something that you know, and they encourage you, and they get you excited about it to go do it. And to be honest, that can be useful, okay? you know, here's your new skill. Here's why it'll be beneficial. Use it. And people walk out of training and feel great. And there's no question that's better than simple intellectual understanding of the new skills. Although I will tell you, it's only better for some. The high C, the perfectionist, the analytical, the reserved analytical task-focused engineer, accountant, software developer, does not want to be motivated. Right, Mike? I mean, they don't.
No.
Don't try to motivate me. I'll take the knowledge and I'll consider it and I'll come up with a plan and I'll figure out whether or not the plan is useful for me.
Motivate. Do you want to manipulate me?
Yes, exactly. So good. I knew you were going to say
just
that
give me the facts. Just give me the data. Come on.
Yeah. Guys, Mike is referring to the fact that in my Wiley DISC profile, there's a line which says other people can feel manipulated by you, which I struggle with. But I use that as a teaching example when I'm doing effective communication conferences that there are lines in everybody's profile that they find difficult to understand. And it's a question of understanding the perspective. We don't manipulate people. But that doesn't mean that some people don't feel manipulated by me. By the same token, I think there's a line in yours that says sometimes you take too long to make decisions. And you would say, well, no, that's not true. I make decisions all the time. And it's a question of perspective. I want to make a decision right now. You want 2 days. 2 days seem like an ice age to me.
Can we talk 30 seconds? Like that's yeah, and no, that's how I feel. High eyes. Like
No.
Like really, 15 seconds? Like
yeah. No, no. I mean, you have all the information. Make a decision, please, now.
Folks, now you know what our one-on-ones feel like to both of us.
It's not a souffle. Anyway, you say potato, I say potato. Guys, something else worth remembering. When we talk about training, Mike and I and Kate and Sarah and everybody on our team know something. The generally accepted number, and not only is it generally accepted, we believe this number at Manager Tools. The generally accepted number for where development comes from is 80% on the job, in the job, doing your job, doing the tasks that make up your responsibilities. Only 10% comes from training.
Yeah. And the other 10% comes from motivation.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, look, guys, so training is real. It's a big industry, and you're going to take advantage of it. But one of the things I probably should have said at the start of the show is we're talking about a secondary value. The most important value, if we want to develop people, is to build trust with them and then start giving them tons of performance communications. We recommend our feedback model. And then, by gosh, start delegating to them and start coaching them yourself. And only in one of our four baseline tools, which, by the way, are based on management science. We didn't invent the underlying principles for them. In only one of them, coaching, do we mention in one of the steps that you might use training. Okay. The primary way to get your people to be more productive, which is a fundamental part of your job to help grow your organization, is to develop them in their job, to give them more to do, to constantly stretch them. In fact, I mentioned to somebody the other day, Mike, that the person who upsets me the most in organizations today is not the liar or the cheater, okay, or even the slightly abusive manager. Now there are so many rules that I don't worry about that too terribly much. And I know some people are losing their minds right now. Just bear with me, guys. The person I am frustrated with is the person who says, no, I'm good right here. I'm just comfortable right here. Okay. First of all, organizations are not about comfort. Okay. Your couch at home is, but you're not supposed to be comfortable at work. Okay. Now, when you sit and put your feet up on your desk and lean back and you're being creative and you're thinking through a problem, I'm not against you feeling comfortable in the moment. Okay. But your job is to be productive. And if you want to grow your organization, and believe me, there are only two stages of organizational life, growth and death. And if you're not growing, you're dying. If you're not constantly pushing, if you're not becoming 2, 3, 5, 7% more effective every year, you may be dragging down the company. these people who say I'm comfortable in my job right here, that's fine. You can stay comfortable in your job at that level, but your level is changing all the time. If the company grows by 10%, you and your role have to grow by 10% to not be a drag on corporate earnings, because earnings are essentially the result of the single biggest determinant of corporate earnings is productivity. And that's internal productivity. And productivity is what you do against the goals of your organization. It's not activity. Activity includes waste. Productivity is activity that's useful, that delivers profitability. And so training is important, but only in one part of your role. And I'd be fine if training went away, if we didn't have a world of training, as long as managers were doing a great deal more. Now, let me go back to my point, excoriating people who are comfortable in their role. The reason this one bothers me the most is it's so incredibly prevalent. Look, the instance of lying and cheating and abuse are 1,000 times worse in the moment. But there are a million more people who are grossly underproductive for their role. And that's what ticks me off. And Mike and I believe that the solution is managers. Yeah, I want to talk to the person and say, hey, you need to do more for your organization. Or go find a different job, right? If you're not aligned with the goals of your organization in such a way that you can really feel great about what you're doing, go find another job. And by the way, we're recording this in February of 2020. If there was ever a time to go find another job, now's the time to do it. I mean, this is the greatest job market in the history of mankind. Or as I mentioned to somebody else, not the only time there's a better job market than this is the start of the world wars, but that's not the kind of job market we want. Okay.
Good point.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I went on a little rant there. What all this adds up to is that training is necessary, or may be necessary, can be useful, but it's not sufficient, because knowledge by itself isn't valuable. That's not what the marketplace wants. It's not what your organization wants. And it's not what we as managers ought to want. And by the way, as just to mention, since we're going to talk about metrics in a minute, training that teaches knowledge and then tries to persuade you because they haven't figured out how to make it actionable during the event. That's why so many training delivery sources capture satisfaction right after the event. If they're good and they included practice, participants feel they've gotten everything out of the training. And we do that too. But it can lead to a false sense of success from training. No training can be called successful for the individual right after the training finishes, because the proof is in a pudding that hasn't been made yet. The proof happens next week, next month, next quarter, next year. Folks, the M Conference is coming up earlier this year. We've almost nailed down the entire speaker lineup. It's going to be another great year. It was so over-requested last year that we agreed to increase the number of attendees from 50 to 65. You will learn from the best again this year from all over our community and elsewhere. And we look forward to seeing you. Come to the website and sign up.
Now, behavior.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, that's, this, you know, what we want is behavior, right? And this, and I've said this on the podcast
before. Behavior at work. Behavior at work, right. Applied behavior toward a productive goal.
And this was when you consulted for my organization, God, how's 20 years ago? Long time.
Long
20 years or so ago. Let's don't talk in those. Those are too large numbers for me.
We did it when we were 15 years old, right?
Yeah, exactly. But that was the fundamental thing. We talked a lot, you know, one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, delegation, all that kind of stuff. But the biggest change for me in the way I thought was starting to think about behavior. What did I want people to do? I wanted them to be motivated. What I wanted is I wanted a bunch of behaviors that I characterized as motivated, right? I mean, that's big, big change.
Yeah.
And it impacted everything I thought about in work from that point forward, everything. When I delegated something, I didn't talk about characterization. I talked about specific behaviors. When I gave somebody feedback, we talked about behavior. So anyways, let's talk about behaviors. And as you can tell, folks, I get excited about behaviors.
Yeah, I do too. So Yeah, what is valuable to organizations is behavior change. And don't get me wrong, guys, we love knowledge. That's why we read all the time, and I'm constantly looking for new ideas to think about them and play around with them in my head and so on. There's no question that knowledge of the new behavior, the knowledge alone, is pretty important in getting to new behavior, but knowing isn't doing. One of your directs leaving a training course knowing what to do isn't valuable to you or your org yet, because doing is what we want. We pay for training not for the knowledge acquired during the training, but the behavior it leads to that we can measure afterwards. But most often, once training ends, the acquired knowledge is never applied. Yeah, okay, you have to know to do, but knowing without doing isn't valuable, even if we're forced to pay for it long before we know.
I think about myself and all my high C friends, right? I just remember conversations where people believe that they're worth more to the company as a function of what they know.
Oh, yeah,
right? MBA. And you don't hear them talking about applied knowledge. I mean, literally, they're saying, well, I know this, so therefore I'm more valuable. And it's like, no, you're not. I mean, you're more valuable if you use it, but knowing it, not so much.
No, I agreed. And in fact, when companies are talking to me about pay structures, they're like, well, we'll pay more for this or that or the other thing. I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. Pay more because people do more. I mean, yeah, we need hygiene. We need a minimum level that's reasonable and effective, and we need to be aware of what the market is doing. But don't pay somebody who has an MBA more. No offense to MBAs. There are many cases. They're fantastic. But yeah, it's useful activity. It's utility that matters, not knowledge. Not saying we want to hire folks who aren't smart, but smart is part of the equation. It's not all the equation. So look, don't be afraid to ask whether a training session has a money-back guarantee. And then don't be afraid to ask for a refund if behavior doesn't change, if the guarantee is for behavior change, and of course it usually isn't. Effective development of your people is applied behavioral development. Most training only gives knowledge development. What we want is to turn that knowledge into applied behaviors. And when we do that, we get a return on our training investment dollars. So then the question becomes, okay, I get it, Mark. I get it, Mike. It's okay. Training is about knowledge and training isn't the answer. I might need to send my people to training, but what I'm really hoping is that they change what they do when they get back, which when I say it like that, it was like, yeah, well, yeah, of course. That's right. But yeah. Okay. So what are you going to do to encourage the behavior change after they get back?
Here's the cool part.
Look, if you want to change something, all you got to do is measure and report on it. That may be one of the 10 most important things I've ever learned as a manager and as an executive. You want to change something? Measure it. Make people report on it. By the way, you can't just measure it because now people have to do more work. But if the measuring is not reported, if it's not looked at, if it's not addressed, if you don't track it and think about it, gradually the measuring will go away because people realize nobody's reading my reports. So what all this means is we don't send people to training, even including ourselves, if we want to set a leader's example, guys, without knowing what behaviors we're going to measure after the participant returns from training. We need to measure the doing and report on the results of the doing. So when one of your team wants to attend training, make sure that they understand that to justify your cost to the organization, the money that's going to come out of your training budget, they'll have to deliver the benefit of the training to the organization, okay? You don't get to go. Training is not about going. Training is about coming back and changing. The best way to do that is either expect them to come up with the behaviors they're willing to commit to changing, or to help them understand, tell them what those behaviors will be. And if they want to change 3 or 4 behaviors that you don't think are very valuable, even though the training might teach them that, you don't have to send them to that training. Okay. Now, guys, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting you zero out your training budget. I'm suggesting you put a higher standard on the budget. That's all. It always amazes us that people ask for training dollars and have not a clue what's going to change and how they're going to measure and report on it afterwards.
Crazy.
Yeah, dude, it's nut job crazy town. It makes the first version of most training requests sound like boondoggles to me. So look, guys, managers, don't approve training budget requests without the participant committing to measuring behaviors and reporting on them after attending, okay? In a lot of cases, this eliminates many trainings and training requests. And I'll tell you, the old joke I have is that why does everybody want to go to Orlando, Florida in February?
Right, well, exactly.
Because it's warm, right? And you'll eliminate trainings where even the training firm can't articulate the behaviors that could change post-training. Now, look, if you're a longtime listener, you know what the behaviors are. Don't be surprised if you say to somebody, hey, ask these guys what behaviors are going to change, and you get back a list of things that aren't behaviors. You know, the participant will feel better about their ability to create a vision. The participant will have a toolbox. Having is never a behavior. Knowing is never a behavior. Feeling is not a behavior.
Yeah. So let's do something at the risk of somebody thinking that we're trying to sell somebody a slot to one of our conferences, which we're not, folks, at all. But many of folks in our audience are familiar with what we do. So let's use an example of an EMC and talk about how somebody might approach behaviors around an EMC or effective manager conference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I also, though, I don't want this to be just about our trainings. And so I'd also like, when I'm done with EMC, I don't want to go on too long, but I also want to mention how I might do it for that internal video training, which, because the internal video training is so eye-opening to people, the aha that people experience when they have a good presentation coach tell them, see here, you did that, and you have video evidence of it. And do you see how that didn't support the point you were making? And the person goes, yeah, that aha moment of awareness and knowledge is a fantastic thing. It's one of the things people love about the presentation training. But hopefully now you can see the aha is not important. There needs to be another domino that would fall. And my point with that is not to attack the video training, the presentation training, because I love it. I want more people to do it. My point is that even the very best trainings that people are excited about and that people say, yeah, it's one of our favorites, oftentimes it's a function of how people feel rather than about what they're going to do. And I want to follow up after the EMC with this. And I'll mention another one, DISC training. The conference that we use DISC at, the Effective Communications Conference, one of the first things I say is most DISC trainings are not effective, but they're loved because people read a document about themselves and get creeped out because it's so accurate. And that is 90% of the value of DISC training. A DISC trainer, ones I've known over the years, will tell you, oh yeah, I love doing DISC because people just love it. Yeah, but do they change their behavior after the event? And what you'll find is that 99% of all DISC training has nothing in it about behavior change. Nothing. Zero. Which means, literally, it's not useful training. Unless you want to make people feel good. And if that's the case, send them to Orlando in February and encourage them to take their families, because there's a big theme park right next to Orlando.
It will motivate them.
So. Yeah, exactly. Oh, they'll feel so good. Feelings are so important. Okay, fine. We'll do the Effective Manager Conference. And look, guys, hopefully you know this. We don't do this very often. What, in 15 years, we've had 4 or 5 casts where we talk about a product or service in any detail. Our long-term audience, if you know somebody who's been listening for a long time, they trust us. They know we're not trying to sell you a slot. But on the other hand, because we know principles about what training is supposed to be, we create training that allows participants to easily answer their boss's questions about the return on investment, behaviorally speaking. And for the record, guys, what I'm about to share with you comes almost verbatim from a recent attendee whose boss wasn't a fan of manager tools, but still allowed his direct to go after hearing the case that this guy made, in fact, based on our guidance. So in the email, I'm taking out all the cruft around the email and getting to the heart of it. This person who came to the conference says, hey, here are the behaviors you can measure on me and that I will provide to you going forward after the event. I'll conduct weekly one-on-ones with all my directs starting 1 month after completion of the training. I will report to you my weekly percentage of one-on-ones conducted for 1 year once one-on-ones begin. Now, look, guys, full disclosure, this attendee had decided to use Roadmap, our tool for rolling out the Trinity, which is done on an app, and it's pretty no-brainer. It does every single step of the Trinity rollout model. And it would give him reporting that he could forward to his boss from a screenshot of his phone. And then the final one, we'll report weekly feedback compliance starting 16 to 18 weeks after completion of the training. This will include both amount of feedback and type of performance communications, positive or negative, to each direct. Now look, if your direct comes to you with a training request like that, it's that specific, it's hard. No, it's not hard to justify that training budget spend. Okay, now, what might it sound like for that video presentation skills? Let's say your company doesn't have the internal video presentation thing, but there is a firm locally to you that does it. And in fact, typically, firms don't have the internal resources, but there are three or four times a year where an external resource comes in and is available, and they get slots that people sign up for. And then various training budgets are billed after the fact. And they're typically ensconced in a training room or two for some period of time. And people rotate through. And it's a great experience for the trainer because they get to do what they love to do. And everybody comes out of there going, wow, I learned so much. And it's really good. Anyway, if you were going to do it externally, it would be something like this. Not that you attend the training, not that you learn, not that you get a video. You might decide to share the video with your boss. Hey, I'll be happy to email you the video or bring it to you on a memory stick. But no, an example might be, we'll present weekly, record my presentations, and share before and after presentations with you. In other words, this person is saying, I'm going to record three or four of my short presentations in the next month or two before the training, and then I'm going to share ones after with you. We'll annotate every video file with behavioral notes based on the template the trainers are going to give to me so that you can see what behaviors I have changed. We'll ask the audience, when appropriate, for scores, grades on my presentation. We'll do so before and after, so that you can see the change in audience perception of me, which is the whole point, according to you, boss, about why I need to go to training. Those are just things that I just thought off the top of my head. Now, look, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, boss, I'd really love to do that video training. Everybody says it's great. If she's my top performer, I'm probably going to let her go. If a middle or bottom performer says it and my training budget's tight, I'd rather have the detailed behavioral analysis before and after, and what are you going to measure, and how often are you going to measure it, so that I know I'm getting my return on investment. And by the way, I'm not saying that I won't ask my top performer to do that, but I'm certainly, in my mind, you don't get to go to training unless you can show me a behavioral return on investment. So summarizing just real quickly, we're not against training, but it is not the answer. It is just the start of the behavior change process, and only one way to start. The end is behavior actually changing and results improving, leading to productivity and profitability. Measure the changes and the results, not the training itself. And, you know, since we are in a business, I will say we'd love for you to apply it to our training sessions as well. That's not what this cast is about. This is helping you become a better manager to apply this all possible training, internal and external, that your people want to go to, or maybe that you want to go to.
Absolutely. I enjoyed that one, dude. This is important stuff. The amount of training people do, like you do this, folks, your return on that investment is going to go up significantly.
Yeah. And wait till you sit in a manager's meeting and somebody said, yeah, I had to turn one of my guys down for training. And Ah, it was a bummer. He's going to be ticked off at me for a week. I'm like, how did you say no? Well, I just told him no. Oh, no, dude, that's not what you do. You got to ask them for more up front. And that way, if you have a criteria, they can tolerate being told no much more easily. And there are people who won't come to you with training requests because they're not willing to fill out 3 or 4 paragraphs in an email to you about what the behavioral return on investment is going to be.
Yeah, nice.
You'll look smart in a manager's meeting.
Self-licking ice cream cone.
There we go. Folks, our long-term licensee we want to say thank you to is Brian Doherty. Brian has been with us since the very beginning. I think he signed up within a couple of weeks of us going live in 2005. He's been to EMC in 2008, which I'm fairly certain was the first year we ever had effective manager conferences. That may have been one of the 2-day long conferences, if you can believe that. If you think the EMC at 1 day is long, you should have been there for the original ones, which are 2 days. Brian, you've been with us for a long time. We appreciate it. I know you and I have corresponded over the years. I appreciate the friendship. It's an honor to serve you, and we hope to keep doing it for many, many, many more years. Thank you, sir.
All right, my friend. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you all next week. So long.